From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, we celebrate Star Trek's 50th anniversary, and you're invited. By the way, a special hello to Dan out there in Spain, a regular listener to Coast. Dan, thank you so much. Here's what's happening. North Korea has conducted its fifth nuclear test, producing the biggest ever explosion yet. Monitors detected artificial seismic waves from a quake measuring a magnitude 5. North Korea has just confirmed that they did this. This is the same country, folks, that sends out videos of nuke explosions hitting Washington, D.C. and New York, and they also have launch capabilities on submarines. A 14-year-old freshman shot and killed herself after wounding another female student at the Alpine High School in West Texas. In that confusion that followed, numerous law enforcement officers rushed to the scene, and a U.S. Marshal accidentally shot a Homeland Security agent. The agent listed in stable condition. He did not release the condition of the wounded student. Injuries didn't appear to be life-threatening there. Just this week, we've heard a lot of reported stories of sightings of clowns in Greensboro, High Point, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And whether the reports are real or not have certainly concerned parents and puzzled law enforcement. It's proving to be a very serious situation now, though, for professional clowns. So much so, one clown couple has considered giving up the profession altogether. They say they just don't have many other options. Hey, I agree with that. A number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits unexpectedly fell last week, pointing to a sustained labor market strength, even as the pace of job growth is slowing. Investment advisor Catherine Austin Fitz with us. Well, Catherine, I keep bringing up a glimmer of good news, but it's not good enough yet, is it?
We had one economist in the Wall Street Journal say about the report that the U.S. is a stable boat, but we have no winds in our sails. I thought that was a pretty good description. George, if you look at the unemployment or underemployment and the people who've given up looking, the employment stats have gotten, you know, they've gotten better, but they're still not great. Part of the problem is productivity growth is dropping, which is very scary for the economic picture. And I believe part of the reason is that we, if you look at incomes, we have not, all the productivity growth since 1970 has gone to the companies, not gone to the workers. So I think you have a pretty discouraged relative workforce relative to where we were in 1970. And frankly, if you look at what's coming next year, it's a lot of automation. The way to improve productivity growth is to automate, automate, automate. And that's going to put more pressure on the workforce.
I think so. Catherine's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com, at solari.com. Listen to this story. Wells Fargo Bank, one of the nation's largest banks, has been hit with a $185 million fine in civil penalties for secretly opening up millions of unauthorized deposit and credit card accounts that harmed customers. Customers didn't even know this was happening. 5,300 employees have been fired. They were doing that to make their personal sales seem like they were increasing, and of course they would get paid more on that. Apple has unveiled new iPhones, as we reported, at the event Wednesday, as it has done every September now for the last few years. The event, held in San Francisco's Bill Graham Civic Auditorium, was the company's most important outing of the year, even as the iPhone remains the outsized producer of Apple's revenue and profit. Sales of the smartphone have recently been declining. So more than ever, the onus now is on Apple to keep up excitement for this gadget. Lauren Weinstein is with us. Lauren, what do you think? Is this gonna help Apple?
It'll keep the Apple ecosystem going for now. There really wasn't much of great drama with the iPhone 7. There were some technical improvements. There's a dual camera now that helps with telephoto type images. I guess, as we were discussing a couple of days ago, the big emotion has been over the confirmation now that they have removed the standard phono earphone jack. that's been in use in consumer devices since when? The 1930s, 40s, something like that. And so that means the only connection to the iPhone really is their proprietary lightning jack. Or you can use wireless earbuds, which is what they're really pushing for.
That's what they want, yeah.
And what they have is a quite expensive, I think they're about $150, maybe a little bit more, a pair of wireless earbuds. They look like something from Fahrenheit 451, basically. One goes at each ear. There's a little column that reaches down from each, and it connects by Bluetooth to the phone. The thing is, $150 earphones, they could just basically fall out of your ear. And there's nothing to catch them. So people are already starting to wonder, you know, could I wear these things without losing them within 5 hours? And parody sites have already started to appear. And the one that I think has gotten the most attention is this beautifully done site that looks like an Apple promotional site. And what it basically says is you can now very inexpensively upgrade your iPhone 6 to an iPhone 7. And what it claims to be selling in this parody is little aluminum cylinders that you can push into the earphone on your iPhone 6 to block it off permanently, and then you've got the earphone capabilities of an iPhone 7. It's incremental for Apple. The smartphone market has become quite
saturated.
Mature. It's mature now, and with all the competition from a multitude of Android handsets and things, you can't really expect drastic changes until there's some, really earth-shattering kind of new development that could push things along faster. And this is going to be a problem for Apple because, as you said, the bulk of their revenue in this context is coming from these devices. What's going to happen next year or 5 years from now? We both know that trying to make those predictions is silly. But, this is good for people that are into the Apple ecosystem, but I don't know how many people are going to rush out to buy the iPhone 7 if they've already got a recent iPhone.
All right, we shall see what happens. Lauren, thanks so much. Concerns about Hillary Clinton's health are serious, could be disqualifying for the position of President of the United States, say nearly 71% of the 250 physicians responding to an informal internet survey. That's a lot of people. This was done by the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. About 20% said concerns were likely overblown, but should be addressed as by full release of medical records. Federal authorities have arrested a woman who set two blankets and a control panel on fire during a JetBlue flight bound for Puerto Rico. And in a moment, Jonathan Cahn joins us. His latest work, The Book of Mysteries. You might remember when he was on with me as we talked about the mystery of the Shemitah. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Jonathan Cahn, of course, caused a national and international stir with his New York Times bestseller, The Harbinger, the ancient mystery that holds the secret of America's future. He's been on our programs many, many times. He has been called the prophetic voice of the generation. He has been named, along with Billy Graham, as one of the top 40 people to have changed our world by Charisma Magazine. And his latest work is called The Book of Mysteries, and we are going to get into that in a big way tonight as well. But, Jonathan, welcome back. It's a great time to have you.
Great to be back, George, always.
Let's get a quick update on the mystery of the Shemitah. We talked back in October. Where do we stand today on that situation?
Okay, well, first off, the Shemitah, since the Shemitah came, actually even from the Shemitah of 2008, and this is the cycle that we talked about, the economy has never recovered. We've had the worst growth, and you even mentioned that in your update, the worst growth in modern times. The effect is still there. But I'll share something with you, and this thing has still gone on and still has affected us to this day. You know, the Shemitah, which is that seven-year cycle, it was really the code, in a sense, that gave the timing of calamities in the Bible. And, you know, the seven-year cycle. Well, let me show you something I really never shared, and in the Shemitah of 2008, when you got to that day that in the Bible is the day of financial wipeout, you had the worst crash in the history of Wall Street, September 29th, worst crash ever to this day. And how much was wiped out? This is on the day of sevens in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
How much was wiped out? It was 777.7 points on the day of sevens. But the thing is now, if you go back from that exact moment or that wipeout and that day, that biblical day, go back seven biblical years, Hebrew years, it takes you exactly to the other greatest crash up to that date, which is 2001. And it happens, it takes you to 4 o'clock, basically, that seven exact years down to the second. But then if you go another, you go 7 days, the seventh day back, it takes you to the day is 9/11. And that takes you to 4 o'clock, 9/11. Go back now 7 hours, it takes you to 9 o'clock, the hour of 9/11. Go back two sevens of minutes, it takes you to 8:46, the exact minute of 9/11. Okay, so you have all that just by the kind of mystery of numbers in the Shemitah. But then what happens now, well, let me just tell you, what we just had, and I know you were covering it, is you had the really, since then, the worst economic or financial just breakup of the economy in one sense, or the crash, was when England, Britain, this summer, you know, broke away from the European Union.
Right.
And you had that was the greatest global, actually, crash since that day of the Shemitah of the 777. So here's the thing. What happens if you go forward with the Shemitah from that exact moment, that 777 of that crash, of that day? This is what happens. If you go, and this is, by the way, this is not something that I first saw. This was in the secular news, and they didn't even realize what was going on, and they said it. If you go from that moment forward, 7 years, 7 months, 7 weeks, and 7 days from the Shemitah, it takes you to June 24th, 2016, the exact day of the Brexit, of the next greatest crash in world history. So the thing is so exact.
Jeez.
It takes you to the exact day. So that has that pattern, and this is really the decoder of time in the Bible, has continued to this day.
Does it say, Jonathan, how long the Shemitahs last once they start?
Well, the Shemitah lasts a year, but then you know, when you come to the seventh Shemitah, you have an extra year, which is actually what we're in, which is the Jubilee. So it's a double period, and the effect of the Shemitah can go on and on. As I said, that from the last Shemitah, it has, I mean, from 2008, the effects are still with us to this day. One of the things that happened in the Shemitah of 2015, it collapsed stock markets to the worst collapse since 2008 Shemitah. But also it collapsed global trade, commodities, oil. I mean, all these things are still collapsed. I mean, productivity, all this is still affecting us.
I like the oil prices right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, that's one benefit, George. That's one benefit. Yeah.
So are you saying in 2022 we'll have another one?
Well, the next Shemitah is should be 2021 and 22. You know, it goes from one to the other. Yeah, that is the next Shemitah. Now, you know, I've always said, you know what, we can't put this God in a box. But the fact is, for the last 50 years, the last 8 cycles, every single one of them has seen a crash. Every single one of them. And in fact, 2015, when I looked at it at the end, was the worst year for money all around in 78 years since the Shemitah of the Great Depression.
Well, with Jonathan Kahn, we're talking about all his works, including the new one, The Book of Mysteries, which we'll get into in a second. The Harbinger, of course, that you wrote, just shot up on the New York Times best-selling list. Where do we stand with some of that prophecy, Jonathan?
Well, it has not stopped. If you remember, the template of The Harbinger, for those who don't know, in a nutshell, is that the same signs that appeared in the last days of ancient Israel, the signs of a civilization heading to destruction, have all appeared in America, and the exact 9 of them have appeared. They have not stopped. And one of the template is that when these appeared in ancient Israel, the nation did not turn back. Instead, they got worse. They got more defiant. They went more against the ways of God and the Holy. Well, America has been racing away from God, racing away from these things, continuously. You know, that's a scary part of the template, because that led to destruction. Well, what happened, you know, one of the days in the ancient calendar that is a day of calamity is called the ninth of Tammuz. And on the ninth of Tammuz, What happened was that that's when the walls that were protecting Jerusalem were removed, were breached, and that led to ultimately to the destruction of the nation. It's like kind of the removing of the hedge of protection that was really kind of sealing judgment. Well, you know, just to touch on this, a year ago, you know, America keeps on kind of going and crossing the line and crossing the line. A year ago, the Supreme Court basically struck down marriage as we have known it in the Bible. And when did it do it? On the 9th of Tammuz, the day of removing the hedge that leads to judgment. So we have not something. I'll throw something else out that I won't go, into it. But actually, you know, I wrote the Harbinger a few years ago. But in the Harbinger, for people who look deep, they will actually find Donald Trump in the Harbinger.
Really?
It's actually linked to that ancient scripture, Isaiah 9, 10, but it's all there. So, and we're in a, I mean, just where we are now is a pivotal place as well.
That is amazing. Now, how do you investigate all this, Jonathan? And we'll get into the Book of Mysteries very soon.
Yeah.
And you've got all kinds of mysteries there mm-hmm. and stories. But how do you get into these?
Well, the way it happened with, you know, with the Harbinger, and I began, I was literally, you know, I'm across the river from 9/11, and I mean from the, you know, the whole thing. And actually, when it happened, my wife, the one who was to be my wife at that time, she was scheduled to actually be in the tower. I mean, at the tower at that time. And last minute, her plans were changed. And many people in our congregation had the same story. So I was at that time. I was seeking, hey God, what is this? And I started being led. And then later on, I'm literally standing at Ground Zero. And I see this tree, the one that was struck down, and something says, you have to seek this out. There's a mystery there. And when I started doing that, it was like this puzzle piece of this ancient mystery. It kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And when I needed, like, the next key, so this is how it happened, George. Somebody would say something, it would be the next key. Or I'd be on my computer, and all of a sudden something would come on my computer that I didn't type, and that would be the next key. So it's like I was led one after the other. So normally, something comes, and then it just unfolds like that.
Jonathan, the work you have done, truly astounding, but I got to tell you, pretty darn scary.
Yeah, if you're, I mean, you know, as we talked about before, you know, yeah, but if you're not right, I mean, the point is, I mean, there's a fear that's okay, and that is to get right, you know, and if the fear says, hey, let me get my life together, let me make sure I'm right, let me make sure I'm ready, that's the point, you know. To me, I mean, it would be more scary if there was no warning. I mean, you know, warning is scary, but it's scarier if there's no warning. So I believe, you know, this is to sound the warning, get ready.
Get ready indeed. Are you religious or spiritual?
I've never called myself religious. You know, I am a minister. I'm a pastor. I'm a rabbi. I'm this. But I would consider myself spiritual. The Bible doesn't really talk about religion in a great way. It talks about a relationship with God.
And we're going to talk about God, too, because there's a mystery about that, too, isn't there?
Yep. Oh, yeah. It all begins. And it all begins and ends with that. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Let's preface all of this. Are we going to be okay by the time most of this unfolds?
Well, I would say is that, you know, if you look at where things are going and you're...
Oh, boy, you're hesitating. You're hesitating.
Well, you're somebody who warns, you know, you're somebody as well, you know, is that the way things are going, that I don't, you know, I believe there has to be a major event and a major turning around for America to avert what happened. If I look at the pattern and the template of the Harbinger and what happened there, the scary thing is we are doing exactly what Israel did. We're following that exact judgment template. There is hope. There's always hope, but you know that hope is in turning around. So whether it will happen, I don't see it, but I believe it can happen. But usually it takes a shaking. I think I told you once, I wouldn't be where I am now if I didn't have a shaking in my life. I was literally hit by a locomotive train. That is the only way I came to God. I was an atheist, so I had to be hit by a locomotive.
Wow.
So, I don't fear shaking. I fear what happens if we don't turn.
Well, what a metamorphosis for you then.
Yeah. I mean, I figured, listen, you know, I ended up saying it was the second time I was almost killed, and I said, okay, God, you know, all right, I think it's a good idea to follow you, and just don't kill me until I do, you know. And that's how it happened, went on my 20th birthday.
We're going to come back in a moment with Jonathan Kahn as we talk about the Book of Mysteries. Now, this book that he has written will show things and reveal things in a pretty different way, in a unique way, than we're used to. So we're going to go through all of those with Jonathan. In our final hour with him, we're going to take phone calls as well as we talk about prophecy, one of my favorite subjects. And if you ever need to email me, just send it to george@coasttocoastam.com, if you would, and we'll take care of it. And if it's a story idea, we'll take care of that with our producers as well. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Jonathan Cahn with us. Jonathan, the Book of Mysteries. Tell me about that.
The Book of Mysteries is like this. If a harbinger is revealing a mystery, the Book of Mysteries is uncovering hundreds of mysteries. It would be like, imagine, in a sense, if you opened up this ancient chest with really what I believe are some of the greatest mysteries of the ages, the mystery of the end times, mysteries of heaven, mysteries, hidden mysteries in the writings of the rabbis, mysteries of really your life, even. You know, so it's on every, I mean, this is a gigantic thing, you know, and I'll give you an example, and there's hundreds, so we'll just, some of the titles are the seven mysteries of your life, the mystery of the secret angels, the how to alter your path, the mystery of the leper king, the Maccabean blueprint, entering the heavenly dimension. It's on everything, and really, you know, the thing is, it's kind of a, in some ways, a unique thing. On the other hand, it's kind of like the harbinger in that there's a narrative around it. So therefore, it's a traveler, and he meets a man, somebody called the teacher, in the desert. And every day, the teacher takes him through, you know, on mountaintops and caves and in secret chambers. And every day he reveals another mystery of the age. Mystery of every day, there's another mystery. So it ends up, it's like there's a year in the desert. So the when you read it, you're really taken onto the journey. You're taken on the journey, and every day there's a mystery for every day of the year. You can read it, you know, one day of the every day there's another mystery, or you can read it right through. But it's almost like hundreds of books. I really put in what I believe are the biggest mysteries, and ones that, not just that, but it's not just to be blown away, but it's also that, you know, at the end of each one, the teacher gives the disciple a mission or how to apply it, take it and apply it to your life, that it can actually transform your life. So I believe that truly, you know, I don't say things lightly like this, but this really can transform lives if you go on this journey. And the other thing is, there are mysteries in here that have never been revealed, as far as we know, never before. So it's really, it's almost like hundreds of harbingers, if you could imagine.
Jonathan, who created the mysteries? Who came up with them?
God did. God did. You know. That, I mean, the first mysteries, when you say that, God. I mean, they're from that. I mean, some of these things are ancient, you know, and in some ways, in a way, and some of them concern the end times. Some of them concerned are the mysteries behind history. Mystery behind, you know, like say the harbinger is a mystery behind history, behind what's happening. Again, things of prophecy. I mean, I was an atheist. What really got me was when I started reading the ancient prophecies that were actually speaking about what had to happen in the last days, and they were all happening. So really, I mean, you know, there's no time difference. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's ancient or not with God, but really that's the source.
How in the heck did you research these?
I think in many ways, you know, this is from years and years of, you know, I looked at all the things that have been shown me, you know, by God's grace, and just, you know, and, you know, and the other thing, and some things just came as I'm writing it, and, you know, the other thing is that, you know, I didn't realize that I'm writing this, and there's 365 mysteries here, and the thing is that I didn't even realize it, but a number of them, when I looked at when on the biblical calendar you have these certain holy days, these certain appointed days, they actually ended up on the exact day, even though I didn't plan it. I mean, some I did, but I didn't even plan the writing of it. So, I mean, in that sense. So every day, George, since we last talked, I would be, you know, from 12 midnight to probably 7 in the morning, I every day mysteries came, and I just wrote them down.
Wow, because you've got hundreds of them.
It was finished probably in May, and it just came on the shelves 2 days ago.
One of the revelations, and you talk about this up front, is the name of God. Tell me why that would be a mystery.
Yeah, well, people don't realize that. I mean, a lot of things are hidden. When people read it in English, you don't realize necessarily what's there. And the very first name in the Bible, the very first actually sentence in the Bible, in the beginning, God created.
God. But, of course, in the original, it doesn't say that. The word is Elohim. And now, the thing about Elohim, the first name of God, is a mystery in itself, because Elohim is not a singular word. It's a plural word. Literally, when it appears other times in the Bible, it's translated as God. But it's God. It's one God. The verb created is singular, but the Elohim, God, is plural. So what's that? Well, it's a code. There's only certain words that are like that in the Bible. And the thing is, what they mean is, when you see that like that, what it's saying is, the reality behind the word is so big, it's so transcendent, that you can't, one word cannot even sum this up. There's no end to God. It means no matter how much you think you know God, doesn't matter if you're a theologian, there's always more, there's always more, there's always more. That's why we have eternity, because that's how long it takes to know him. So the first thing, the very first sentence in the Bible breaks the laws of grammar. It's something that God breaks the laws of really time and space. That's just the start. I'll just mention another one. When the Bible records Moses asks God, "What's your name?" And he gives him this name, which is called the Tetragrammaton. And that is, it's basically YHVH, and I'm saying this in English. Yeah, so we got that. We get Yahweh from that. We got Jehovah from that. Nobody knows exactly how to say it. But that name is so sacred that they say that even the scribes would have to take a bath when they wrote down that the Tetragrammaton. You weren't supposed to say that much, But the thing is, and yet, we say the sacred name of God all the time. And let me tell you how it is. Everybody who's listening says it, has always said it. Every time you say, I'm George, they say, I'm Jonathan, and you have to say, I am.
I am. I am Jonathan. Yeah.
The I am is the name of God. That's the Tetragrammaton. It's I am. So in order to even say your name, you have to say the name of God first. And so if you say, for instance, if you say, I'm alone, you have to say, I am. You're not alone, because you have to say, I am first. So one of the kind of mysteries applying this to a life is that, we think of it, hey, we're trying to reach God, we're trying to be good enough. It's not just to go to God, it's from God, to live. Everything you do comes from I am, saying your existence, your very existence, our moments, we're talking together. The moment, everything we do comes from him, to live from him. That's what the mystery is, and to put him first, everything you do from heaven. And the other thing about it is, we think even something as, we think, well, the name of Jesus. Well, the name of Jesus, he was never called Jesus. His real name was Yeshua. And it says in the Hebrew scriptures, if you look, there's a mystery there, because it keeps saying, God will become my salvation. Well, the word for salvation is Yeshua. So you could be taken as God will become Yeshua. And that's Jesus. And the thing is that the name Jesus literally means, it's a tetragrammaton, it means I am is my salvation. So even that, it breaks laws. When they said to Jesus, they said, well, how old are you? I mean, you're talking about Abraham. You weren't even alive. He says, before Abraham was, I am. I mean, that breaks the laws. I mean, the first thing is, it breaks the laws of logic. It goes beyond. God is bigger. We got to be open. It's bigger than anything we could imagine.
I'm going to throw out a number of your mysteries and have you talk about them. And one of them, of course, is called the mystery of timelessness. And you talk about altering your past. Tell me about this.
Yeah, well, people don't read this. It's nothing you would not get in the English. But
no.
In the original of the Bible, in Hebrew, if people don't realize this, there's no real past, present, and future. There's no real time test. Actually, Hebrew is actually timeless. They use certain words to stand for it, but there's actually no real past, present, and future. It's a timeless language. What you have is only two things. You have the perfect tense and the imperfect tense. Perfect means it's finished, and imperfect means it's nothing. So you actually have things in the Bible that talk about the future as if it was the past, as if it already happened. It's things that are already sealed before they happen. And then at the same time, you could talk about the past as if it still could be changed. So the Bible actually speaks of changing one's past, that you can actually change your past. God can do that and that changes your life. But also, it means there's a way to live in timelessness, meaning there's a way to actually live. One of the mysteries is called living from the future. We are to live from what we are to become. In other words, it's not just, hey, I want to become this owner. Actually, in God, that's already there. You are to live from what you are. You're not just to wait for victory. You're to live from victory. You're not just to, Jesus said, you live from, it's on earth as it is in heaven. Heaven's first. There's a way to live from heaven now. There's a way, there's One of the mysteries is called Entering the Heavenly Dimension. There's a way to do that now, but it goes against every natural way of thinking. But that's actually the real Bible. It's timeless.
Is it like a time machine, basically?
Well, you could say that it's beyond time. You know, I mean, God's beyond. Now, listen, how does a sheep herder from, you know, 6th century BC talk about what's happening now? Talk about Israel coming back in the world. Talk about the end times. How do they do that? The prophet didn't know it, but God does. God is out, is beyond time, beyond time, beyond space. But to live in that realm, there's ways to actually live in that realm. That's what it's about.
Jonathan, these mysteries, do they all point to prophecy?
Well, they all, prophecy, you can take prophecy as end time, which I don't get into, end time things are yet to be, but also, prophecy also means revealing these things. You know, in the Book of Mysteries, every day that, the teacher is revealing something, and that's what it's about, the God who reveals things. So in that sense, it's prophetic, but it's really on everything you can imagine.
What is apostasia?
Okay, there. One of the streams of mysteries in the book is that of the apostasy. The teacher takes the disciple into a room of ancient books, opens up to a page that has a picture that's fading away, and the words are fading away. And here's the meaning. Here's the thing. The Bible says before the end comes, there'll be a great falling away, there'll be a falling away from faith. The word behind it, though, is apostasia. We get the word apostasy. And we know apostasy means falling away from faith. Well, or falling away from the stead. But there's this, I would say, in a sense, a secret meaning that's never spoken about, which is so revealing, and that is that the word apostasy also means not just the falling away from faith, but actually the falling away from the state of being. So here's the catch here. Here's the secret here. It says in the end times will be a falling away from faith. Well, we're watching that. You can see it all around. But at the same time, it means if you fall away from faith, if the civilization is falling away from God, it will also fall away from the state of being or the state of creation. Meaning, in the end times, not only will there be a fall, an apostasy, but there will also be man will fall away from the state of manhood. Woman will fall away from the state of womanhood. Marriage will fall away from the state of marriage. Family from the state of family. Human beings away from the state of humanity. We are watching that happen all around us. The state of creation. So that is just as sure as apostasy. We're watching it, and that's the reason. It's right there in the Bible. And, there's another thing there, and that it talks about, as far as the end times, it speaks about, there's a parable that where Jesus talks about a man who's possessed, and it says that he gets delivered, and then then he turns back to the evil, and and seven more spirits come in, and it's worse than before. And people say, well, that's about exorcism and possession. But Jesus is actually speaking about a civilization, and here's the key with this: the end time. Western civilization was once totally pagan, and then it got, in a sense, cleaned up. That's what it's talking. It got all these gods and all that cleaned up. But what it's saying is, if it turns back away from God and turns back to evil or immorality, it's going to be seven times worse than it was before. And how that translates is that, before you had the gospel, you had Nero, you had Caligula, but when you have a post-Christian civilization is much more dangerous than a pre-Christian one, because that's what you produce Hitler's, you produce Stalin's, you produce ultimately the Antichrist, and that's end time prophecy. So what it's saying is that we are witnessing that in the same time, that as well.
Let's talk a little bit about the mystery behind the existence of America, which you call the Ninth of Av mystery.
Yes. Okay. There is a day. Now, this is where the mysteries get behind, history and all things. And the teacher takes the student to these rooms and then talks about this mystery in the Bible. Well, it goes all the way back to the Babylon, and yet it has to do with America, ultimately. That is that there's a day on the biblical calendar when calamities take place, where the worst calamities in Jewish history take place on the same day. The first temple of Solomon was destroyed by Babylonians on the 9th of Av. The second temple, centuries later, that actually Jesus predicted, But the Romans come in, they destroy it on the exact same day. And they're not reading the Bible. They think it's just the exact same day. Then it's one calamity after the other. The Jews are expelled from England on the 9th of Av. The Jews are expelled from France on the 9th of Av. The Holocaust, the key date beginning on the 9th of Av, again and again and again. But one of the greatest events in history, or a calamity for the Jewish people, is when they were expelled from Spain. It was the greatest refuge for the Jewish people. And we grow up hearing about, you know, Ferdinand and Isabella, you know, great people. Well, they persecuted the Jews. They said, we're going to kill you if you don't get out. And so they fled, you know, they fled Spain. The day they had to get out, the last Jews had to get out, was the 9th of Av. And they were fleeing on ships and fleeing and all that. But here's the thing. There's another mystery here, because whenever there's a calamity, there's also a redemption. God always begins a redemption right after it. So we're talking about the 9th of Av mystery. That's in the book. But what about the 10th of Av mystery? What about a redemption? Well, here's the thing. The day after the Jewish people had to get out, the 9th of Av, they were fleeing in those Spanish ships. There were three ships that were in that same harbor. They were the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. Right there. And that's on the 10th of Av. That's the day of redemption. So what happened? So as they're going out, Columbus is waiting to sail. And that day began, it was the beginning of America as we know it. And what was that? Well, as the Jewish people lost their greatest homeland, what would become an even greater refuge for them, America, was being begun that very day. America began its link to this ancient mystery, and not just for the Jewish people, but if, you know, but for really refuge for all people. But that began. This goes back to Babylon in the Bible, exact day.
So these are all true, aren't they? These mysteries.
You can look. You know, it's like with the harbinger. When I wrote the harbinger, people saying, "Why? I can't believe this is real." They went on the internet and said, "Well, you know, this is really true." And yeah, this is absolutely, absolutely fact true. You know, the thing is that these mysteries are behind our entire lives. I mean, you will see, just like the harmony, it's behind our lives. I mean, everything.
The Bible talks about the creationism of 6 days and then the rest of the seventh day. You talk about an eighth day mystery. What the heck is that?
Yes. Yeah, the mystery, this is really the most mysterious day in the Bible. It's one of the mysteries. There's actually a stream of these kind of mysteries in the book, and that is that the most mysterious day in the Bible is called the eighth day. And that is that it's the very last appointed day of the holy days. And nobody knows what it is, George. I mean, the rabbis, they're trying to figure it out. They still don't know what this is. But here's the thing. In the Bible, you know, you have the number seven, as you said, the seventh day. That's the number of the end. It's the Sabbath. It's the last day. It's the completion. It's it. It's the end. So what's the eighth day? The eighth day is what happens after the end. It's what happens. It's the day that breaks out of time and space. It's like, you know, if you turn an eight on its side, it becomes infinity. Well, that's where the mystery is. If you read the book of Revelation, the end of the Bible, you got all these sevens happening, seven trumpets, seven, you know, seven angels, seven bowls, all that, until you get to the very, very end. And then it's no longer the seventh day. Then you get into the eighth day, when it starts talking about eternity. It's going beyond the end. It's going beyond limitation, beyond everything else. And the thing is that when, we know about the resurrection happened on a Sunday. Well, Sunday is not just the first day of the week. It's the eighth day of the week. It's the day that breaks the barriers. It breaks that. When believers all over the world meet on Sunday, it's actually linked to this mystery. They are meeting on the eighth day. And there is a way, as I mentioned before, there's a way to actually live beyond this world even now. There's a way to live. We're called to enter the eighth day. And, you know, I'll give you, one other thing with this, and that I can just touch on, and that is that, you know, in the Bible, the Spirit of God is actually represented by oil. And the word in Hebrew for oil is the word shemesh.
Stay with us, Jonathan. We're going to hit the break, but we'll be back with more at the top of the hour on Coast to Coast AM.